died free. The gods themselves. Continuing on page 94. 2A. Dua was aware of the left-right agitation concerning her in a dim and faraway manner, and her rebelliousness grew. If one or the other, or both, came to get her, it would end in a melting, and she raged against the thought. It was all trick new, except for the children, all trick wanted, except for the third and last child, and it was all involved with the children and the still-missing child. And when Trick wanted the melting, he got it. Trick dominated the triad when he grew stubborn. He would hold on to some simple idea and never let go, and in the end, Odin and Dua would have to give in. Yet now she wouldn't give in. She wouldn't. She didn't feel disloyal at the thought, either. She never expected to feel for either Odin or Trick the sheer intensity of longing they felt for each other. She could melt alone. They could melt only through her mediation. So why didn't that make her the more regarded? She felt intense pleasure at the three-way melting. Of course she did. It would be stupid to deny it. But it was a pleasure akin to that which she felt when she passed through a rock wall, as she sometimes secretly did. To Trit and Odin, the pleasure was like nothing else they had ever experienced or could ever experience. No, wait. Odin had the pleasure of learning, of what he called intellectual development. Dua felt some of that at times, enough to know what it might mean, and though it was different from melting, it might serve as a substitute, at least to the point where Odin could do without melting sometimes. But not so Trit. For him, there was only melting and the children. Only. And when his small mind bent entirely upon that, Odin would give in, and then Dua would have to. Once she had rebelled. But what happens when we melt? It's hours, days sometimes, before we come out of it. What happens all that time? Trit had looked outraged at that. It's always that way. It's got to be. I don't like anything that's got to be. I want to know why. Odin had looked embarrassed. He spent half his life being embarrassed. He said, "Now, Dua, it does have to be, on account of children." He seemed to pulse as he said the word. "Well, don't pulse," said Dua sharply. "We're grown now, and we've melted I don't know how many times, and we all know it's so we can have children. You might as well say so. Why does it take so long, that's all?" "Because it's a complicated process," said Odin, still pulsing. "Because it takes energy, Dua. It takes a long time to get a child started, and even when we take a long time, it doesn't always get started. And it's getting worse, not just with us," he added hastily. "Worse?" said Trit anxiously, but Odin would say no more. They had a child, eventually, a baby rational, a leftlet, that flitted and thinned so that all three were in raptures, and even Odin would hold it and let it change shape in his hands for as long as Trit would allow him to. For it was Trit, of course, who had actually incubated it through the long pre-forming, Trit, who had separated from it when it assumed independent existence, and Trit, who cared for it at all times. After that, Trit was often not with them, and Dua was oddly pleased. Trit's obsession annoyed her, but Odin's, oddly, pleased her. She became increasingly aware of his importance. There was something to being a rational that made it possible to answer questions, and somehow Dua had questions for him constantly. He was readier to answer when Trit was not present. "Why does it take so long, Odin? I don't like to melt and then not know what's happening for days at a time." "You're perfectly safe, Dua," said Odin earnestly. "Come, nothing has ever happened to us, has it? You've never heard of anything ever happening to any other triad, have you? Besides, you shouldn't ask questions." "Because I'm an emotional? Because other emotionals don't ask questions? I can't stand other emotionals, if you want to know, and I do want to ask questions." She was perfectly aware that Odin was looking at her as though he had never seen anyone as attractive, and that if Trit had been present, melting would have taken place at once. She even let herself thin out. not much, but perceptibly, in deliberate coquettishness. Odine said, "But you might not understand the implications, Dua. It takes a great deal of energy to initiate a new spark of life."
"You often mentioned energy. What is it, exactly?"
"Why, what we eat." "Well then, why don't you say food?"
"Because food and energy aren't quite the same thing. Our food comes from the sun, and that's a kind of energy. But there are other kinds of energy that are not food.
When we eat, we've got to spread out and absorb the light. It's hardest for emotionals because they're much more transparent. That is, the light tends to pass through instead of being absorbed."
It was wonderful to have it explained, Dua thought.
What she was told, she really knew. But she didn't know the proper words, the long science words that Odin knew. And it made sharper and more meaningful everything that happened. Occasionally now, in adult life, when she no longer feared that childish teasing, when she shared in the prestige of being part of the Odin triad, she tried to swarm with other emotionals and to withstand the chatter and the crowding. After all, she did occasionally feel like a more substantial meal than she usually got, and it did make for better melting. There was a joy. Sometimes she almost caught the pleasure the others got out of it, in slithering and maneuvering for exposure to sunlight, in the luxurious contraction and condensation to absorb the warmth through greater thickness with greater efficiency. Yet for Dua, a little of that went quite away, and the others never seemed to have enough. There was a kind of gluttonous wiggle about them that Dua could not duplicate, and that, at length, she could not endure. That was why rationals and parentals were so rarely on the surface. Their thickness made it possible for them to eat quickly and leave. Emotionals writhed in the sun for hours, for though they ate more slowly, they actually needed more energy than the others, at least for melting. The emotional supplied the energy, Odin had explained, pulsing so that his signals were barely understood, and the rational the seed, the parental the incubator. Once Dua understood that, a certain amusement began to blend with her disapproval when she watched the other emotionals virtually slurp up the ruddy sunlight. Since they never asked questions, she was sure they didn't know why they did it, and couldn't understand that there was an obscene side to their quivering condensations, or to the way in which they went tittering down below eventually, on their way to a good melt, of course, with lots of energy to spare. She could also stand Trit's annoyance when she would come down without that swirling opacity that meant a good gorging. Yet why should they complain? The thinness she retained meant a defter melting, not as sloppy and glutinous as the other triad managed, perhaps, but it was the ethereality that counted, she felt sure. And the little left and little right came eventually, didn't they? Of course, it was the baby emotional, the little mid, that was the crux. That took more energy than the other two, and Dua never had enough. Even Odin was beginning to mention it. "You're not getting enough sunlight, Dua."
"Yes, I am," said Dua hastily.
"Genius triad," said Odin, "has just initiated an emotional." Dua didn't like Genia. She never had. She was empty-headed even by emotional standards. Dua said loftily, "I suppose she's boasting about it. She has no delicacy. I suppose she's saying, 'I shouldn't mention it, my dear, but you'll never guess what my leftling and rightling have gone and went and done.'" She imitated Genia's tremulous signaling with deadly accuracy, and Odin was amused. But then he said, "Genia may be a dunder, but she has initiated an emotional, and Trit is upset about it. We've been at it for much longer than they have." Dua turned away. "I get all the sun I can stand. I do it till I'm too full to move. I don't know what you want of me." Odin said, "Don't be angry. I promised Trit I would talk to you. He thinks you listen to me." "Oh, Trit just thinks it's odd that you explain science to me. He doesn't understand. Do you want a middling like the others?"
"No," said Odin seriously. "You're not like the others, and I'm glad of it. And if you're interested in rational talk, then let me explain something.
The sun doesn't supply the food it used to in ancient times. The light energy is less, and it takes longer exposures. The birth rate has been dropping for ages, and the world's population is only a fraction of what it once was.
I can't help it, said Dua rebelliously.
The hard ones may be able to. Their numbers have been decreasing, too.
Do they pass on?
Dua was suddenly interested. She always thought they were immortal somehow, that they weren't born, that they didn't die. Who had ever seen a baby hard one, for instance? They didn't have babies. They didn't melt. They didn't eat.
Odin said thoughtfully, I imagine they pass on. They never talk about themselves to me. I'm not even sure how they eat, but of course they must, and be born. There's a new one, for instance. I haven't seen him yet. But never mind that. The point is that they've been developing an artificial food.
I know, said Dua. I've tasted it.
You have? I didn't know that.
A bunch of the emotionals talked about it. They said a hard one was asking for volunteers to taste it, and the sillies were all afraid. They said it would probably turn them permanently hard, and they would never be able to melt again.
That's foolish, said Odin vehemently.
I know, so I volunteered. That shut them up. They are so hard to endure, Odin.
How was it?
Horrible, said Dua vehemently. Harsh and bitter. Of course, I didn't tell the other emotionals that.
Odin said, I tasted it. It wasn't that bad.
Rationals and parentals don't care what food tastes like.
But Odin said, it's still only experimental. They're working hard on improvements, the hard ones are. Especially Estwald. That's the one I mentioned before, the new one I haven't seen. He's working on it.
Boston speaks of him now and then as though he's something special. A very great scientist.
How is it you've never seen him?
I'm just a soft one. You don't suppose they show me and tell me everything, do you? Some day I'll see him, I suppose. He's developed a new energy source which may save us all yet.
I don't want artificial food, said Dua, and she had left Odin abruptly.
That had been not so long ago, and Odin had not mentioned this Estwald again, but she knew he would, and she brooded about it up here in the sunset.
She had seen that artificial food that once, a glowing sphere of light like a tiny sun in a special cavern set up by the hard ones. She could taste its bitterness yet.
Would they improve it? Would they make it taste better, even delicious?
And would she have to eat it then and fill herself with it till the full sensation gave her an almost uncontrollable desire to melt?
She feared that self-generating desire. It was different when the desire came through the hectic combined stimulation of leftling and rightling.
It was the self-generation that meant she would be ripe to bring about the initiation of a little nib.
And she didn't want to. It was a long time before she would admit the truth to herself. She didn't want to initiate an emotional. It was after the three children were all born that the time would inevitably come to pass on, and she didn't want to. She remembered the day her parental had left her forever, and it was never going to be like that for her. Of that she was fiercely determined. The other emotionals didn't care, because they were too empty to think about it. But she was different. She was Queer Dua, the left M. That was what they had called her, and she would be different. As long as she didn't have that third child, she would not pass on. She would continue to live. So she wasn't going to have that third child. Never. Never. But how was she going to stave it off? And how would she keep Odin from finding out? What if Odin found out?
2B. Odin waited for Trip to do something. He was reasonably sure that Trip would not actually go up to the surface after Dua. It would mean leaving the children, and that was always hard for Trip to do. Trip waited without speaking for a while, and when he left, it was in the direction of the children's alcove. Odin was almost glad when Trip left. Not quite, of course, for Trip had been angry and withdrawn, so that interpersonal contact had weakened and the barrier of displeasure had arisen.
Odin could not help but be melancholy at that. It was like the slowing of the life pulse. He sometimes wondered if Trit felt it too. No, that was unfair. Trit had the special relationship with the children. And as for Dua, who could tell what Dua felt? Who could tell what any emotional felt? They were so different, they made left and right seem alike in everything but mind. But even allowing for the erratic way of emotionals, who could tell what Dua, especially Dua, felt? That was why Odin managed to be almost glad when Trit left, for Dua was the question. The delay in initiating the third child was indeed becoming too long, and Dua was growing less amenable to persuasion, not more. There was a growing restlessness in Odin himself that he could not quite identify, and it was something he would have to discuss with Loslin. He made his way down to the hard caverns, hastening his movements into a continuous flow that was not nearly as undignified as the oddly exciting mixture of wavering and rushing that marked the emotional curve along, or as amusing as the stolid weight shift of the parental. He had the keen thought image of Trit clumping in pursuit of the baby rational, who, of course, was almost as slippery at his age as an emotional, and of Dua having to block the baby and bring him back, and of Trit cluckingly undecided whether to shake the small life object or enfold him with his substance. From the start, Trit could thin himself more effectively for the babies than for Odin, and when Odin rallied him about that, Trit answered gravely, for of course he had no humor about such things, "Ah, but the children needed more." Odin was selfishly pleased with his own flow, and thought it graceful and impressive. He had mentioned that once to Losten, to whom as his hard teacher he confessed everything, and Losten had said, "But don't you think an emotional or a parental feels the same about his own flow pattern? If each of you think differently and act differently, ought you not to be pleased differently? A triad doesn't preclude individuality, you know." Odin wasn't sure he understood about individuality. Did that mean being alone? A hard one was alone, of course. There were no triads among them. How did they stand it? Odin had still been quite young when the matter had come up. His relationship with the hard ones had only been beginning, and it suddenly struck him that he wasn't sure that there were no triads among them. That fact was common legend among the soft ones, but how correct was the legend? Odin thought about that, and decided one must ask and not accept matters on faith. Odin had said, "Are you a left or a right, sir?" In later times, Odin pulsed at the memory of that question. How incredibly naive to have asked it! And it was very little comfort that every rational asked the question of a hard one in some fashion, sooner or later, usually sooner. Losten answered quite calmly, "Neither, little left. There are no lefts or rights among the hard ones." "Or middle emotionals?" "Or middlings?" And the hard one changed the shape of his permanent sensory region in a fashion that Odin eventually associated with amusement or pleasure. "No, no middlings either. Just hard ones of one kind." Odin had to ask. It came out involuntarily, quite against his desire. "But how do you stand it?" "It is different with us, little left. We are used to it." Could Odin be used to such a thing? There was the parental triad that had filled his life so far, and the sure knowledge that he would, at some not too distant time, form a triad of his own. What was life without that? He thought about it hard now and then. He thought about everything hard as it came up. Sometimes he managed to catch a glimpse of what it might mean. That hard ones had only themselves, neither left brother, nor right brother, nor mid-sister, nor melting, nor children, nor parentals. They had only the mind, only the inquiry into the universe. Perhaps that was enough for them. As Odin grew older, he caught bits of understanding as to the joys of inquiry. They were almost enough, and then he would think of Trit and of Dua, and decide that even all the universe beside was not quite enough. unless... It was odd, but every once in a while it seemed that there might come a time, a situation, a condition when... Then he would lose the momentary glimpse, or rather, glimpse of a glimpse, and miss it all. Yet in time it would return, and lately he thought it grew stronger and would remain almost long enough to be caught. But none of that was what should involve him now. He had to see about Dua. He made his way along the well-known route, along which he had first been taken by his parental, as Trit would soon take their own young rational, their own baby left. And, of course, he was instantly lost in memory again. It had been frightening then. There had been other young rationals, all pulsing and shimmering and changing shape, despite the parental signals on every side to stay firm and smooth and not disgrace the triad. One small left, a playmate of Odin, had in fact flattened thin, baby fashion, and would not unflatten, despite all the efforts of his horribly embarrassed parental. He had since become a perfectly normal student, though no Odin, as Odin himself could not help realizing with considerable complacency. They met a number of hard ones on that first day of school. They stopped at each in order that the young rational vibration pattern might be recorded in several specialized ways, and for a decision to be reached as to whether to accept them for instruction then or to wait another interval, and if then, for what kind of instruction. Odin, in a desperate effort, had drawn himself smooth as a hard one approached, and held himself unwavering. The hard one said, and the first sound of the odd tones of his voice almost undid Odin's determination to be grown up. "This is quite a firm-held rational. How do you represent yourself, Left?" It was the first time Odin had ever been called Left, instead of in the form of some diminutive, and he felt firmer than ever as he managed to say, "Odin, hard sir," using the polite address his parental had carefully taught him. Dimly, Odin remembered being taken through the hard caverns, with their equipment, their machinery, their libraries, their meaningless crowding sights and sounds. More than the actual sense perceptions, he remembered his inner feeling of despair. What would they do with him? His parental had told him that he would learn, but he didn't know what was really meant by learn, and when he asked his parental, it turned out that the older one didn't know either. It took him a while to find out, and the experience was pleasurable, so pleasurable, and yet not without its worrisome aspects. The hard one who had first called him Left was his first teacher. The hard one taught him to interpret the wave recordings so that after a while what seemed an incomprehensible code became words, words just as clear as those he could form with his own vibrations. But then that first one didn't appear anymore, and another hard one took over. It was a time before Odin noticed. It was difficult in those early days to tell one hard one from another, to differentiate among their voices. But then he grew certain. Little by little, he grew certain, and he trembled at the change. He didn't understand its significance. He gathered courage and finally asked, "Where is my teacher, hard sir?" "Gamaldan? He will no longer be with you, Left." Odin was speechless for a moment. Then he said, "But hard ones don't pass on." He did not quite finish the phrase. It choked off. The new hard one was passive, said nothing, volunteered nothing. It was always to be like that, Odin found out. They never talked about themselves. On every other subject they discoursed freely. Concerning themselves, nothing. From dozens of pieces of evidence, Odin could not help but decide that hard ones passed on, that they were not immortal, something so many soft ones took for granted. Yet no hard one ever said as much. Odin and the other student rationals sometimes discussed it, hesitantly, uneasily. Each brought in some small item that pointed inexorably to mortality of the hard ones, and wondered, and did not like to conclude the obvious, so they let it go. The hard ones did not seem to mind that hints of mortality existed. They did nothing to mask it, but they never mentioned it either. and if the question was asked directly, sometimes it was, inevitably, they never answered, neither denying nor affirming. And if they passed on, they had to be born also, yet they said nothing of that, and Odin never saw a young hard one. Odin believed the hard ones got their energy from rocks instead of from the sun, at least that they incorporated a powdered black rock into their bodies. Some of the other students thought so too. Others, rather vehemently, refused to accept that. Nor could they come to a conclusion, for no one ever saw them feeding in any way, and the hard ones never spoke of that either. In the end, Odin took their reticence for granted, as part of themselves. Perhaps, he thought, it was their individuality, the fact that they formed no triads. It built a shell about them. And then, too, Odin learned things of such grave import that questions concerning the private life of the hard ones turned to trivia, in any case. He learned, for instance, that the whole world was shriveling, dwindling. It was Losten, the new teacher, who told him that. Odin had asked about the unoccupied caverns that stretched so endlessly into the bowels of the world, and Losten had seemed pleased. "Are you afraid to ask about that, Odin?" He was Odin now, not some general reference to his lefthood. It was always a source of pride to hear a hard one addressing by personal name. Many did so. Odin was a prodigy of understanding, and the use of his name seemed a recognition of the fact. More than once, Losten had expressed satisfaction at having him as a pupil. Odin was indeed afraid, and, after some hesitation, said so. It was always easier to confess shortcomings to the hard ones than to fellow rationals, much easier than to confess them to Trit, unthinkable to confess them to Trit. Those were the days before Dua. "Then why do you ask?" Odin hesitated again. Then he said slowly, "I'm afraid of the unoccupied caverns because when I was young I was told they had all sorts of monstrous things in them. But I know nothing of that directly. I only know what I have been told by other young ones who couldn't have known directly either. I want to find out the truth about them, and the wanting has grown until there is more of curiosity in me than fear." Losten looked pleased. "Good. The curiosity is useful. The fear useless. Your inner development is excellent, Odin, and remember, it is only your inner development that counts in the important things. Our help to you is marginal. Since you want to know, it is easy to tell you that the unoccupied caverns are truly unoccupied. They are empty. There is nothing in them but the unimportant things left behind in times past." "Left behind by whom, hard sir?" Odin felt uneasily compelled to use the honorific whenever he was too obviously in the presence of knowledge he lacked that the other had. "By those who occupied them in times past. There was a time, thousands of cycles ago, when there were many thousands of hard ones and millions of soft ones. There are fewer of us now than there were in the past, Odin. Nowadays there are not quite 300 hard ones, and fewer than 10,000 soft ones." "Why?" said Odin, shocked. "Only 300 hard ones left." This was surely an open admission that hard ones passed on, but this was not the time to think of that. "Because energy is diminishing. The sun is cooling. It becomes harder in every cycle to give birth and to live." "Well then, did not that mean that the hard ones gave birth too? And did it mean that the hard ones depended on the sun for food too? And not on rocks?" Odin filed the thought away and dismissed it for now. "Will this continue?" Odin asked. "The sun must dwindle to an end, Odin, and some day give no food." "Does that mean that all of us, the hard ones and the soft ones too, will pass on?" "What else can it mean?" "We can't all pass on. If we need energy and the sun is coming to an end, we must find other sources, other stars." "But, Odin, all the stars are coming to an end. The universe is coming to an end." "If the stars come to an end, is there no food elsewhere?" No other source of energy?
No. All the energy sources in all the universe are coming to an end.
Odin considered that rebelliously, then said,
Then other universes. We can't give up just because the universe does.
He was palpitating as he said it.
He had expanded with quite unforgivable discourtesy until he had swelled translucently into a size distinctly larger than the hard one.
But Lawson merely expressed extreme pleasure.
He said, Wonderful, my left dear. The others must hear of it.
Odin had collapsed to normal size in mingled embarrassment and pleasure at hearing himself addressed as left dear, a phrase he had never heard anyone use to him, except Trit, of course.
It had not been very long after that that Lawson himself had brought them Dua. Odin had wondered idly if there had been any connection, but after a while wonder burned itself out. Trit had repeated so often that it was his own approach to Lawson that had brought them Dua that Odin gave up thinking about it. It was too confusing. But now he was coming to Lawson again. A long time had passed since those earlier days when he first learned that the universe was coming to an end and that, as it turned out, the hard ones were resolutely laboring to live on anyway. He himself had become adept in many fields, and Lawson confessed that in physics there was little he could any longer teach Odin that a soft one could profitably learn. And there were other young rationals to take in hand, so he did not see Lawson as frequently as he once did. Odin found Lawson with two half-grown rationals in the radiation chamber. Lawson saw him at once through the glass and came out, closing the door carefully behind him. My left dear, he said, holding out his limbs in a gesture of friendship, so that Odin, as so often in the past, experienced a perverse desire to touch, but controlled it. How are you?
I did not mean to interrupt, Lawson, sir.
Interrupt? Those two will get along perfectly well by themselves for a time. They are probably glad to see me go, for I am sure I weary them with overmuch talk.
Nonsense, said Odin. You always fascinated me, and I'm sure you fascinate them.
Well, well, it is good of you to say so. I see you frequently in the library, and I hear from others that you do well in your advanced courses, and that makes me miss my best student. How is Trit? Is he as parentally stubborn in his ways as ever?
More stubborn every day. He gives strength to the trial.
And Dua?
Dua, I have come. She is very unusual, you know.
Lawson nodded.
Yes, I know that.
His expression was one that Odin had grown to associate with melancholy. Odin waited a moment, then decided to tackle the matter directly. He said, Lawson, sir, was she brought to us, to Trit and myself, just because she was unusual?
Lawson said, Would you be surprised?
You are very unusual yourself, Odin, and you have told me on a number of occasions that Trit is.
Yes, said Odin with conviction, he is.
Then oughtn't your triad include an unusual emotional?
There are many ways of being unusual, said Odin thoughtfully.
In some ways, Dua's odd ways displease Trit and worry me.
May I consult you?
Always.
She is not fond of melting.
Lawson listened gravely, to all appearances unembarrassed.
Odin went on. She is fond of melting when we melt, that is, but it is not always easy to persuade her to do so.
Lawson said, How does Trit feel about melting? I mean, aside from the immediate pleasure of the act, what does it mean to him besides pleasure?
The children, of course, said Odin. I like them, and Dua likes them too, but Trit is the parental.
Do you understand that?
It suddenly seemed to Odin that Lawson couldn't possibly understand all the subtleties of the triad.
I try to understand, said Lawson. It seems to me, then, that Trit gets more out of melting than melting alone. And how about yourself? What do you get out of it besides the pleasure?
Odin considered.
I think you know that. A kind of mental stimulation.
Yes, I know that. But I want to make sure you know. I want to make sure you haven't forgotten. You have told me often that when you come out of a period of melting, with its odd loss of time, during which I admit I sometimes didn't see you for rather long periods, that suddenly you found yourself understanding many things that had seemed obscure before. It was as though my mind remained active in the interval, said Odine. It was as though there was time which, even though I was unaware of its passing and unconscious of my existence, was necessary to me, during which I could think more deeply and intensely without the distraction of the less intellectual side of life. Yes, agreed Lawson, and you'd come back with a quantum jump in understanding. It is a common thing among you rationals, though I must admit no one improved in such great jumps as you did. I honestly think that no rational in history did so. Really? Said Odine, trying not to seem unduly elated. On the other hand, I may be wrong, and Lawson seemed slightly amused at the other's sudden loss of shimmer. But never mind that. The point is that you, like Trit, get something out of the melt besides the melt itself. Yes, most certainly. And what does Dua get out of the melt besides the melt? There was a long pause. I don't know, said Odine. Have you never asked her?
Never.
But then, said Lawson, if all she gets out of a melt is the melt, and if you and Trit get out of it the melt plus something else, why should she be as eager for it as you two are? Other emotionals don't seem to require, began Odine defensively. Other emotionals aren't like Dua. You've told me that often enough, and I think with satisfaction. Odine felt ashamed. I had thought it might be something else. What might that be? It's hard to explain. We know each other in the triad. We sense each other. In some ways, all three of us are part of a single individual, a misty individual that comes and goes. Mostly, it's unconscious. If we think about it with too great a concentration, we lose it, so we can never get real detail. Odine stopped rather hopelessly. It's hard to explain the triad to someone. Nevertheless, I am trying to understand. You think you have caught a portion of Dua's inner mind, something she has tried to keep secret. Is that it? I'm not sure. It is the vaguest impression sensed through the corner of my mind just now and then. Well? I sometimes think Dua doesn't want to have a baby emotional. Lawson looked at him gravely. You only have two children so far, I think. A little left and a little right. Yes, only two. The emotional is difficult to initiate, you know. I know. And Dua will not trouble to absorb the necessary energy, or even try to. She has any number of reasons, but I can't believe any of them. It seems to me that for some reason she just doesn't want an emotional. For myself, if Dua really didn't want one for a while, well, I would let her have her way. But Trit is a parental, and he wants one. He must have one. And somehow I can't disappoint Trit, not even for Dua. If Dua had some rational cause for not wanting to initiate an emotional, would that make a difference with you? With me, certainly, but not with Trit. He doesn't understand such things. But would you labor to keep him patient? Yes, I would, for as long as I could. Lawson said, Has it occurred to you that hardly any soft ones— Here he hesitated, as though searching for a word, and then he used the customary soft one phrase— ever pass on before the children are born, all three, with the baby emotional last? Yes, I know. Odine wondered how Lawson could possibly think him ignorant of so elementary a bit of knowledge. Then the birth of a baby emotional is equivalent to the coming of time to pass on. Usually, not until the emotional is old enough, but the time for passing on will be coming. Might it not be that Dua does not want to pass on? How can that be, Lawson? When the time comes to pass on, it is as when the time comes to melt. How can you not want to? Hard ones didn't melt, Perhaps they didn't understand. Suppose Dua simply wants never to pass on. What would you then say?
Why, that we must pass on eventually. If Dua merely wants to delay the last baby, I might humor her and even persuade Trip to, perhaps. If she wants never to have it, that simply can't be allowed.
Why so? Odin paused to think it out.
I can't say, Lawson, sir, but I know we must pass on. I know it more and feel it more with each cycle, and sometimes I almost think I understand why.
You are a philosopher, I sometimes think, Odin, said Lawson dryly. Let's consider. By the time the third baby comes and grows, Trit will have had all his children and can look forward to passing on after a fulfilled life. You yourself will have had the satisfaction of much learning, and you, too, can pass on after a fulfilled life. But Dua?
I don't know, said Odin wretchedly. Other emotionals cling together all life long and seem to get some pleasure out of chattering with each other. Dua, however, will not do that.
Well, she is unusual. Is there nothing she likes?
She likes to listen to me talk about my work, mumbled Odin.
Lawson said, Well, don't be ashamed of that, Odin. Every rational talks about his work to his right and his mid. You all pretend you don't, but you all do.
Odin said, But Dua listens, Lawson, sir.
I'm quite sure she does, not like other emotionals.
And does it ever seem to you that she understands rather better after a melt?
Yes, I have noticed that at times. I didn't particularly pay any attention, though.
Because you are sure emotionals can't really understand these things. But there seems to be considerable of the rational in Dua.
Odin looked up at Lawson with sudden consternation. Once Dua had told him of her childhood unhappiness, only once. Of the shrill calls of the other emotionals, of the filthy name they had called her, Left M. Had Lawson heard of that somehow? But he was only looking calmly at Odin.
Odin said, I had sometimes thought that, too.
Then he burst out, I am proud of her for that.
Nothing wrong with that, said Lawson. Why not tell her so? And if she likes to pamper the rationalness in herself, why not let her? Teach her what you know more intensively. Answer her questions. Will it disgrace your triad to do that?
I don't care if it does, and why should it anyway? Trit will think it a waste of time, but I'll handle him.
Explain to him that if Dua gets more out of life and a truer sense of fulfillment, she might not have the fear of passing on that she now has, and might be more ready to have a baby emotional. It was as though an enormous feeling of impending disaster had been lifted from Odin. He said hurriedly, You're right. I feel you're right. Lawson, sir, you understand so much. With you leading the hard ones, how can we fail to continue succeeding in the Other Universe project?
With me? Lawson was amused. You forget it is Estwald who is guiding us now. He is the real hero of the project. It would be nowhere without him.
Oh, yes, said Odin, momentarily discomfited. He had never yet seen Estwald. In fact, he had not yet met a soft one who had actually met him, though some reported having seen him in the distance now and then. Estwald was a new hard one, new at least in the sense that when Odin had been young, he had never heard him mentioned. Didn't that mean that Estwald was a young hard one, had been a child hard one when Odin had been a child soft one? Never mind that. Right now, Odin wanted to get back home. He couldn't touch Lawson in gratitude, but he could thank him again and then hasten away joyfully. There was a selfish component to his joy. It was not just the distant prospect of the baby emotional and the thought of Crit's pleasure. It was not even the thought of Dua's fulfillment. What counted with him at this very moment was the immediate, gleeful prospect ahead. He was going to be able to teach. No other rational could feel the pleasure of so doing, he was sure, for no other rational could possibly have an emotional like Dua as part of the triad. It would be wonderful
If only Trit could be made to understand the necessity. He would have to talk to Trit, somehow persuade him to be patient. 2C. Trit had never felt less patient. He did not pretend to understand why Dua acted the way she did. He did not want to try. He did not care. He never knew why emotionals did what they did. And Dua didn't even act like the other emotionals. She never thought about the important thing. She would look at the sun, but then she would thin out so that the light and food would just pass through her. Then she would say it was beautiful. That was not the important thing. The important thing was to eat. What was beautiful about eating? What was beautiful? She always wanted to melt differently. Once she said, "Let's talk first. We never talk about it. We never think about it." Odin would always say, "Let her have her way about it, Trit. It makes it better." Odin was always patient. He always thought things would be better when they waited, or else he would want to think it out. Trit wasn't sure he knew what Odin meant by think it out. It seemed to him it just meant that Odin did nothing. Like getting Dua in the first place, Odin would still be thinking it out. Trit went right up and asked. That was the way to be. Now Odin wouldn't do anything about Dua. What about the baby emotional, which was what mattered? Well, Trit would do something about it if Odin didn't. In fact, he was doing something. He was edging down the long corridor, even as all this was going through his mind. He was hardly aware he had come this far. Was this thinking it out? Well, he would not let himself be frightened. He would not back away. Stolidly, he looked about him. This was the way to the hard caverns. He knew he would be going that way with his little left before very long. He had been shown the way by Odin once. He did not know what he would do when he got there this time. Still, he felt no fright at all. He wanted a baby emotional. It was his right to have a baby emotional. Nothing was more important than that. The hard ones would see he got one. Hadn't they brought him Dua when he had asked? But who would he ask? Could it be any hard one? Dimly, he had made up his mind, not any hard one. There was the name of one he would ask for. Then he would talk to him about it. He remembered the name. He even remembered when he had first heard the name. It was the time when the little left had grown old enough to begin changing shape voluntarily. What a great day! Come, Odin, quickly! Anis is all oval and hard! All by himself, too! Dua, look! And they had rushed in. Anis was the only child then. They had had to wait so long for the second. So they rushed in, and he was just plastered in the corner. He was curling at himself and flowing over his resting place like wet clay. Odin had left because he was busy. But Dua said, "Oh, he'll do it again, Trit." They had watched for hours, and he didn't. Trit was hurt that Odin hadn't waited. He would have scolded, but Odin looked so weary. There were definite wrinkles in his ovoid, and he made no effort to smooth them out. Trit said anxiously, "Is anything wrong, Odin?" "A hard day, and I'm not sure I'm going to get differential equations before the next melting." Trit didn't remember the exact hard words. It was something like that. Odin always used hard words. "Do you want to melt now?" "Oh, no. I just saw Dua heading topside, and you know how she is if we try to interrupt that. There's no rush, really. There's a new hard one, too." "A new hard one?" said Trit, with distinct lack of interest. Odin found sharp interest in associating with hard ones, but Trit wished the interest didn't exist. Odin was more intent on what he called his education than any other rational in the area. That was unfair. Odin was too wrapped up in that. Dua was too wrapped up in roaming the surface alone. No one was properly interested in the triad but Trit. "He's called Estwald," said Odin. "Estwald?" Trit did feel a twinge of interest. Perhaps it was because he was anxiously sensing Odin's feelings.
I've never seen him, but they all talk about him.
Odin's eyes had flattened out as they usually did when he turned introspective.
He's responsible for that new thing they've got.
What new thing?
The positron pup.
You wouldn't understand, Trit. It's a new thing they have. It's going to revolutionize the whole world.
What's revolutionize?
Make everything different.
Trit was at once alarmed.
They mustn't make everything different.
They'll make everything better.
Different isn't always worse.
Anyway, Estwald is responsible.
He's very bright. I get the feeling.
Then why don't you like him?
I didn't say I didn't like him.
You feel as though you don't like him.
Oh, nothing of the sort, Trit. It's just that somehow...
Odin laughed.
I'm jealous. Hard ones are so intelligent that a soft one is nothing in comparison.
But I got used to that, because Losten was always telling me how bright I was.
For a soft one, I suppose.
But now this Estwald comes along, and even Losten seems lost in admiration, and I'm really nothing.
Trit bellied out his foreplane to have it just make contact with Odin, who looked up and smiled.
But that's just stupidity on my part. Who cares how smart a hard one is?
Not one of them has a Trit.
After that, they both went looking for Dua after all.
For a wonder, she had finished wandering about and was just heading down again.
It was a very good melting, though the time lapse was only a day or so.
Trit worried about meltings, then. With Annie so small, even a short absence was risky, though there were always other parentals who could take over.
After that, Odin mentioned Estwald now and then.
He always called him the new one, even after considerable time had passed.
He still had never seen him.
I think I avoid him, he said one time when Dua was with them, because he knows so much about the new device. I don't want to find out too soon. It's too much fun to learn.
The positron pump? Dua had asked.
That was another funny thing about Dua, Trit thought. It annoyed him. She could say the hard words almost as well as Odin could. An emotional shouldn't be like that.
So Trit made up his mind to ask Estwald, because Odin had said he was smart. Besides, Odin had never seen him.
Estwald couldn't say, I've talked to Odin about it, Trit, and you mustn't worry.
Everyone thought that if you talked to the rational, you were talking to the triad. Nobody paid attention to the parentals, but they would have to this time.
He was in the hard caverns, and everything seemed different. There was nothing there that looked like anything Trit could understand. It was all wrong and frightening.
Still, he was too anxious to see Estwald to let himself really be frightened. He said to himself, I want my little mid. That made him feel firm enough to walk forward.
He saw a hard one, finally. There was just this one, doing something, bending over something, doing something.
Odin once told him that hard ones were always working at their whatever it was.
Trit didn't remember and didn't care.
He moved smoothly up and stopped.
Hard, sir, he said.
The hard one looked up at him, and the air vibrated about him the way Odin said it did when two hard ones talked to each other sometimes.
Then the hard one seemed really to see Trit and said, Why, it's a right.
What is your business here?
Do you have your little left with you? Is today the start of the semester?
Trit ignored it all. He said, Where can I find Estwald, sir?
Find whom?
Estwald.
The hard one was silent for a long moment. Then he said,
What is your business with Estwald, right?
Trit felt stubborn.
It is important I speak to him. Are you Estwald, hard sir?
No, I am not.
What is your name, right?
Trit, hard sir.
I see.
You're the right of Odin's triad, aren't you?
Yes.
The hard one's voice seemed to soften. "I'm afraid you can't see Estwald at the moment. He's not here. If anyone else can help you..." Trit didn't know what to say. He simply stood there. The hard one said, "You go home now. Talk to Odin. He'll help you. Yes? Go home, right." The hard one turned away. He seemed very concerned in matters other than Trit, and Trit still stood there, uncertain. Then he moved into another section quietly, flowing noiselessly. The hard one did not look up. Trit was not certain at first why he had moved in that particular direction. At first, he felt only that it was good to do so. Then it was clear. There was a thin warmth of food about him, and he was nibbling at it. He had not been conscious of hunger, yet now he was eating and enjoying. The sun was nowhere. Instinctively he looked up, but of course he was in a cavern. Yet the food was better than he had ever found it to be on the surface. He looked about, wondering. He wondered most of all that he should be wondering. He had sometimes been impatient with Odin because Odin wondered about so many things that didn't matter. Now he himself, Trit, was wondering. But what he was wondering about did matter. Suddenly, he saw that it did matter. With an almost blinding flash, he realized that he wouldn't wonder unless something inside him told it did matter. He acted quickly, marveling at his own bravery. After a while, he retraced his steps. He moved past the hard one again, the one to whom he had earlier spoken. He said, "I am going home, hard sir." The hard one merely said something incoherent. He was still doing something, bending over something, doing silly things and not seeing the important thing. If hard ones were so great and powerful and smart, Trit thought, how could they be so stupid? 3A. Dua found herself drifting toward the hard caverns. Partly it was because it was something to do now that the sun had set, something to keep her from returning home for an additional period of time, something to delay having to listen to the importunities of Trit and the half-embarrassed, half-resigned suggestions of Odin. Partly, too, it was the attraction they held for her in themselves. She had felt that for a long time, ever since she was little, in fact, and had given up trying to pretend it wasn't so. Emotionals weren't supposed to feel such attractions. Sometimes little emotionals did. Dua was old enough and experienced enough to know that. But this quickly faded, or they were quickly discouraged if it didn't fade quickly enough. When she herself had been a child, though, she had continued stubbornly curious about the world and the sun and the caverns and anything at all, till her parental would say, "You're a queer one, Dua dear. You're a funny little nibbling. What will become of you?" She hadn't the vaguest notion at first of what was so queer and so funny about wanting to know. She found quickly enough that her parental could not answer her questions. She once tried her left father, but he showed none of her parental's soft puzzlement. He snapped, "Why do you ask, Dua?" And his look seemed harshly inquiring. She ran away, frightened, and did not ask him again. But then one day, another emotional of her own age had shrieked, "Left him!" at her after she had said, she no longer remembered. It had been something that had seemed natural to her at the time. Dua had been abashed without knowing why, and had asked her considerably older left brother what a left M was. He had withdrawn, embarrassed, clearly embarrassed, mumbling, "I don't know," when it was obvious he did. After some thought, she went to her parental and said, "Am I a left M, Daddy?" And he had said, "Who called you that, Dua? You must not repeat such words." She flowed herself about his near corner, thought about it a while, and said, "Is it bad?" He said, "You'll grow out of it," and let himself bulge a bit to make her swing outward and vibrate in the game she had always loved. She somehow didn't love it now, for it was quite clear that he hadn't answered her, really. She moved away thoughtfully. He had said, "You'll grow out of it." So she was in it now. But in what? Even then, she had had few real friends among the other emotionals. They liked to whisper and giggle together, but she preferred flowing over the crumbled rocks and enjoying the sensation of their roughness. There were, however, some mids who were more friendly than others, and whom she found less provoking. There was Doral, who was as silly as the rest, really, but who would sometimes chatter amusingly. Doral had grown up to join a triad with Dua's right brother and a young left from another cavern complex, a left whom Dua did not particularly like. Doral had then gone on to initiate a baby left, a baby right, in rapid succession, and a baby mid not too long after that. She had also grown so dense that the triad looked as though it had two parentals, and Dua wondered if they could still melt. Just the same, Trick was always telling her, pointedly, what a good triad Doral helped make up. She and Doral had sat alone one day, and Dua had whispered, "Doral, do you know what a left M is?" And Doral had tittered and compressed herself, as though to avoid being seen, and had said, "It's an emotional that acts like a rational, you know, like a left. Get it? Left emotional. Left M. Get it?" Of course Dua got the phrase. It was obvious once explained. She would have seen it for herself at once if she had been able to bring herself to imagine such a state of affairs. Dua said, "How do you know?" "The older girls told me." Doral's substance swirled, and Dua found the motion unpleasant. "It's dirty," Doral said. "Why?" asked Dua. "Because it's dirty. Emotionals shouldn't act like rationals." Dua had never thought about the possibility, but now she did. She said, "Why shouldn't they?" "Because. Do you want to know something else that's dirty?" Dua couldn't help being intrigued. "What?" Doral didn't say anything, but a portion of herself expanded suddenly and brushed against the unsuspecting Dua before the latter could concavize. Dua didn't like it. She shrank away and said, "Don't do that." "You know what else is dirty? You can go into a rock." "No, you can't," said Dua. It had been a silly thing to say, for Dua had often moved through the outer surface of the rock and liked it. But now, in the context of Doral's snickering, she felt revolted and denied the whole thing even to herself. "Yes, you can. It's called rock rubbing. Emotionals can do it easy. Lefts and rights can only do it as babies. When they grow up, they do it with each other." "I don't believe you. You're making it up." "They do, I tell you. Do you know Dimmitt?" "No." "Sure you do. She's the girl with the thick corner from Cavern C." "Is she the one who flows funny?" "Yes, on account of the thick corner. That's the one. She got into a rock all the way once, except for the thick corner. She let her left brother watch her do it, and he told their parental, and what she got for that, she never did it again." Dua left then, quite upset. She didn't talk to Doral again for a long time, and never really grew friendly again. And yet, her curiosity had been aroused. Her curiosity? Why not say her left-emishness? One day, when she was quite sure her parental wasn't in the vicinity, she let herself melt into a rock, slowly, just a little. It had been the first time she had tried it since she was quite young, and she didn't think she had ever dared go so deep. There was a warmness about the sensation, but when she emerged, she felt as though everyone could tell, as though the rock had left a stain on her. She tried it again now and then, more boldly, and let herself enjoy it more. She never sank in really deeply, of course. Eventually she was caught by her parental, who clucked away in displeasure, and she was more careful after that. She was older now, and knew for certain fact that despite Doral's snickering, it wasn't in the least uncommon. Practically every emotional did it now and then, and some quite openly admitted it. It happened less frequently as they grew older, and Dua didn't think that any emotional she knew ever did it after joining a triad and beginning the proper meltings. It was one of her secrets. She never told anybody that she had kept it up, and that once or twice she had tried it even after triad formation. Those few times she had thought, what if Tripp found out? Somehow, that seemed to present formidable consequences and rather spoiled the fun. Confusedly, she found excuses for this, to herself, in her ordeal with the others. The cry of Left M began to follow her everywhere in a kind of public humiliation. There was one period in her life when she had been driven into an almost hermit-like isolation to escape. If she had begun with a liking for aloneness, that had confirmed it. And, being alone, she found consolation in the rocks. Rock rubbing, whether it was dirty or not, was a solitary act, and they were forcing her to be solitary. At least, so she told herself. She had tried to strike back once. She had cried out, "You're a bunch of right-ems, a bunch of dirty right-ems," at the taunting nids. They had only laughed, and Dua had run away in confusion and frustration. They were. Almost every emotional, when she was getting on to the age of triad formation, became interested in babies, fluttering about them in parental imitation, which Dua had found repulsive. She herself had never felt such interest. Babies were only babies. They were for Wright brothers to worry about. The name-calling died as Dua grew older. It helped that she retained a girlishly rarefied structure and could flow with a smoky curl no other could duplicate. And when, increasingly, lefts and rights showed interest in her, the other emotionals found it difficult to sneer. And yet, now that no one ever dared speak disrespectfully to Dua, for it was well known through all the caverns that Odin was the most prominent rational of the generation, and Dua was his middling, she herself knew that she was a left end past all redemption. She didn't think it dirty, not really, but occasionally she caught herself wishing she were a rational, and then she was abashed. She wondered if other emotionals did ever, or just once in a while, and if that was why, partly, she didn't want a baby emotional, because she wasn't a real emotional herself, and didn't fill her triad role properly. Odin hadn't minded her being a left M. He never called her that. But he liked her interest in his life. He liked her questions, and he would explain, and he liked the way she could understand. He even defended her when Trit grew jealous. Well, not jealous, really, but filled with a feeling that it was all unfit in his stubborn and limited outlook on the world. Odin had taken her to the hard caverns occasionally, eager to posture before Dua, and openly pleased at the fact that Dua was impressed. And she was impressed, not so much with the clear fact of his knowledge and intelligence, but with the fact that he did not resent sharing it. She remembered her left father's harsh response that one time she had questioned him. She never loved Odin so much as when he let her share his life, and yet even that was part of her left emishness. Perhaps, this had occurred to her over and over, by being left emish, she moved closer to Odin and farther from Prit, and this was another reason Prit's importunities repelled her. Odin had never hinted at anything like that, but perhaps Prit felt it vaguely and was unable to grasp it completely, but did so well enough to be unhappy over it without being able to explain why. The first time she was in a hard cavern, she had heard two hard ones talking together. She didn't know they were talking, of course. There was air vibration, very rapid, very changing. It made an unpleasant buzz deep inside her. She had to rarefy and let it through. Odin had said, "They're talking," then hastily, anticipating the objection, "Their kind of talk. They understand each other." Dua had managed to grasp the concept. It was all the more delightful to understand quickly, because that pleased Odin so. He once said, "None of the other rationals I've ever met have anything but an empty head for an emotional. I'm lucky." She had said, "But the other rationals seem to like empty heads. Why are you different from them, Odin?" Odin did not deny that the other rationals liked empty heads. He just said, I've never figured it out, and I don't think it's important that I do. I'm pleased with you, and I'm pleased that I'm pleased. She said, Can you understand hard one talk?
Not really, said Odine. I can't sense the changes fast enough.
Sometimes I can get a feel for what they're saying, even without understanding, especially after we've melted. Just sometimes, though. Getting feels like that is really an emotional trick, except even if an emotional does it, she can never make real sense out of what she's feeling. You might, though.
Dua demurred. I'd be afraid to. They might not like it.
Oh, go on. I'm curious. See if you can tell what they're talking about.
Shall I? Really?
Go ahead. If they catch you and are annoyed, I'll say I made you do it.
Promise?
I promise.
Feeling rather fluttery, Dua let herself reach out to the hard ones and adopted the total passivity that allowed the influx of feelings.
She said, Excitement! They're excited! Someone new!
Odine said, Maybe that's Eswald.
It was the first time Dua had heard the name. She said, That's funny.
What's funny?
I have the feeling of a big sun, a really big sun.
Odine looked thoughtful.
They might be talking about that.
But how can that be?
It was just at that time that the hard ones spied them. They approached in a friendly manner and greeted them in soft one fashion of speech. Dua was horribly embarrassed and wondered if they knew she had been sensing them. If they did, though, they said nothing. Odine told her afterward that it was quite rare to come upon hard ones talking among themselves in their own fashion. They always deferred to the soft ones and seemed always to suspend their own work when soft ones were there.
They like us so much, said Odine. They are very kind.
Once in a while he would take her down to the hard caverns, usually when Trith was entirely wrapped up in the children. Nor did Odine go out of his way to tell Trith that he had taken Dua down. It was sure to evoke some response to the effect that Odine's coddling simply encouraged Dua's reluctance to sun herself, and just made the melting that much more ineffective. It was hard to talk to Trith for more than 5 minutes without melting coming into the conversation. She had even come down alone once or twice. It had always frightened her a little to do so, though the hard ones she met were always friendly, always very kind, as Odine said. But they did not seem to take her seriously. They were pleased, but somehow amused, she could feel that definitely, when she asked questions. And when they answered, it was in a simple way that carried no information.
Just a machine, Dua, they would say.
Odine might be able to tell you. She wondered if she had met Eswald. She never quite dared ask the names of the hard ones she met, except Losten, to whom Odine had introduced her, and of whom she had heard a great deal. Sometimes it seemed to her that this hard one or that might be he. Odine talked about him with great awe, and with some resentment. She gathered that he was too engaged in work of the deepest importance to be in the caverns accessible to the soft ones. She pieced together what Odine told her and, little by little, discovered that the world needed food badly. Odine hardly ever called it food. He said energy instead, and said it was the hard one word for it. The sun was fading and dying, but Eswald had discovered how to find energy far away, far beyond the sun, far beyond the 7 stars that shone in the dark night sky. Odine said the 7 stars were 7 suns that were very distant, and that there were many other stars that were even more distant and were too dim to be seen. Trit had heard him say that, and had asked of what use it was for stars to exist if they couldn't be seen, and he didn't believe a word of it. Odine had said, Now, Trit, in a patient way. Dua had been about to say something very like that which Trit had said, but changed her mind after that. It looked now as though there would be plenty of energy forever, plenty of food, at least as soon as Eswald and the other hard ones learned to make the new energy taste right. It had only been a few days ago when she had said to Odine, Do you remember long ago when you took me to the hard caverns and I sensed the hard ones, and said I caught the feeling of a big sun?
Odin looked puzzled for a moment. I'm not sure, but go ahead, Dua, what about it?
I've been thinking. Is the big sun the source of the new energy?
Odin had said happily, That's good, Dua, it's not quite right, but that's such good intuition for an emotional.
And now Dua had been moving slowly, rather moodily, during all this time of reveries. Without particularly noting the passage of either time or space, she found herself in the hard caverns, and was just beginning to wonder if she had really delayed all she safely could, and whether she might not turn home now, and face the inevitable annoyance of Trit when, almost as though the thought of Trit had brought it about, she sensed Trit. The sensation was so strong that there was only one confused moment in which she had thought that somehow she was picking up his feelings far away in the home cavern. No, he was here, down here in the hard caverns with her. But what could he be doing here? Was he pursuing her? Was he going to quarrel with her here? Was he foolishly going to appeal to the hard ones? Dua didn't think she could endure that. And then the feeling of cold horror left her, and was replaced by astonishment. Trit was not thinking of her at all. He had to be unaware of her presence. All she could sense about him was an overwhelming feeling of some sort of determination, mixed with fear and apprehension at something he would do. Dua might have penetrated farther and found out something, at least, about what it was he had done, and why, but nothing was further from her thoughts. Since Trit didn't know she was in the vicinity, she wanted to make sure of only one thing, that he continued not to know. She did, then, almost in pure reflex, something that a moment before she would have sworn she would never dream of doing under any circumstances. Perhaps it was, she later thought, because of her idle reminiscences of that little girl talk with Doral, or her memories of her own experiments with rock rubbing. There was a complicated adult word for it, but she found that word infinitely more embarrassing than the one all the children had used. In any case, without quite knowing what she was doing or, for a short while afterward, what she had done, she simply flowed hastily into the nearest wall. Into it. Every bit of her. The horror of what she had done was mitigated by the perfect manner in which it accomplished its purpose. Trit passed by with an almost touching distance, and remained completely unaware that at one point he might have reached out and touched his middling. By that time, Dua had no room to wonder what Trit might be doing in the hard caverns if he had not come in pursuit of her. She forgot Trit completely. What filled her instead was pure astonishment at her position. Even in childhood, she had never melted completely into rock, or met anyone who admitted she had, though there were invariably tales of someone else who had. Certainly no adult emotional ever had or could. Dua was unusually rarefied, even for an emotional. Odin was fond of telling her that, and her avoidance of food accentuated this, as Trit often said. What she had just done indicated the extent of her rarefaction, more than any amount of rightling scolding, and for a moment she was ashamed and sorry for Trit. And then she was swept by a deeper shame. What if she were caught? She, an adult. If a hard one passed and lingered, she could not possibly bring herself to emerge if anyone were watching. But how long could she stay within? And what if they discovered her in the rock? And even as she thought that, she sensed the hard ones, and then, somehow, realized they were far away. She paused, strove to calm herself. The rock, permeating and surrounding her, lent a kind of grayness to her perception, but didn't dim it. Instead, she sensed more sharply. She could still sense Trit in his steady motion downward, as sharply as though he were by her side, and she could sense the hard ones, though they were a cavern complex away. She saw the hard ones, every single one of them, each in his place, and could sense their vibratory speech to the fullest detail, and even catch bits of what they were saying. She was sensing as she never had before, and never dreamed she could. So, though she could now leave the rock, secure in the knowledge she was both alone and unobserved, she did not. Partly out of amazement, partly out of a curious exultation she felt at understanding, and her desire to experience it further. Her sensitivity was such that she even knew why she was sensitive. Odin had frequently remarked how well he understood something after a period of melting, even though he had not understood it at all before. There was something about the melted state that increased sensitivity incredibly. More was absorbed, more was used. It was because of the greater atomic density during melting, Odin had said. Even though Dua was not sure what greater atomic density meant, it came with melting, and wasn't this present situation rather like melting? Hadn't Dua melted with rock? When the triad melted, all the sensitivity went to Odin's benefit. The rational absorbed it, gained understanding, and retained that understanding after separation. But now Dua was the only consciousness in the melt. It was herself and the rock. There was greater atomic density, surely, with only herself to benefit. Was this why rock rubbing was considered a perversion? Was this why emotionals were warned off? Or was it just Dua because she was so rarefied? Or because she was a left M? And then Dua stopped all speculation and just sensed in fascination. She was only mechanically aware of Trip returning, moving past her, passing in the direction back from which he had come. She was only mechanically aware, scarcely feeling the vaguest surprise, that Odin, too, was coming up from the hard caverns. It was the hard ones she was sensing, only they, trying to make more out of her perceptions, trying to make the most out of them. It was a long time before she detached and flowed out of the rock. And when that time came, she was not concerned over much as to whether she would be observed. She was confident enough of her sensing ability to know she wouldn't be. And she returned home, deep in thought. 3B. Odin had returned home to find Trip waiting for him, but Dua still hadn't returned. Trip did not seem disturbed at that. Or, at least he seemed disturbed, but not at that. His emotions were strong enough so that Odin could sense them clearly, but he let them go without proving. It was Dua's absence that made Odin restless, to the extent that he found himself annoyed at Trit's presence simply because Trit was not Dua. In this he surprised himself. He could not deny to himself that it was Trit who, of the two, was the dearer to him. Ideally, all members of the triad were one, and any member should treat the other two exactly on a par, both with each other and with him, herself. Yet Odin had never met a triad in which this was so, least of all among those who loudly proclaimed their triad to be ideal in this respect. One of the three was always a little left out, and generally knew it too. It was rarely the emotional, though. They supported each other cross-triad, to an extent that rationals and parentals never did. The rational had his teacher, the proverb went, and the parental his children, but the emotional had all the other emotionals. Emotionals compared notes, and if one claimed neglect, or could be made to claim it, she was sent back with a thin patter of instructions to stand firm, to demand. And because melting depended so much on the emotional and her attitude, she was usually pampered by both left and right. But Dua was so non-emotional and emotional. She didn't seem to care that Odin and Trick were so close, and she had no close friendships among the emotionals to make her care. Of course that was it. She was so non-emotional and emotional. Odin loved having her so interested in his work, loved having her so concerned and so amazingly ready of comprehension. But that was an intellectual love. The deeper feeling went to steady, stupid Trit, who knew his place so well and who could offer so little other than exactly what counted, the security of assured routine. But now Odin felt petulant. He said, "Have you heard from Dua, Trit?" And Trit did not answer directly. He said, "I am busy. I will see you later. I have been doing things." "Where are the children? Have you been gone too? There's a been gone feel to you." A note of annoyance made itself plain in Trit's voice. "The children are well trained. They know enough to place themselves in community care. Really, Odine, they are not babies." But he did not deny the been gone aura that he faintly exuded. "I'm sorry. I'm just anxious to see Dua."
"You should feel so more often," Trit said. "You always tell me to leave her alone. You look for her."
And he went on to the deeper recesses of the home cavern. Odin looked after his rightling with some surprise. At almost any other occasion he would have followed in an attempt to probe the unusual uneasiness that was making itself quite evident through the ingrained stolidity of a parental. What had Trit done? But he was waiting for Dua, and growing more anxious by the moment, and he let Trit go. Anxiety keened Odin's sensitivity. There was almost a perverse pride among rationals in their relative poverty of perception. Such perception wasn't a thing of the mind. It was most characteristic of emotionals. Odin was a rational of rationals, proud of reasoning rather than feeling. Yet now he flung out the imperfect net of his emotional perception as far as he could, and wished, for just a moment, that he were an emotional, so that he could send it out farther and better. Yet it eventually served his purpose. He could detect Hugh's approach, finally, at an unusual distance for him, and he hastened out to meet her. And because he made her out at such a distance, he was more aware of her rarefaction than he ordinarily was. She was a delicate mist, no more. Trit was right, Odin thought with sudden sharp concern. Dua must be made to eat and to melt. Her interest in life must be increased. He was so intent on the necessity of this that when she flung herself flowingly toward him and virtually engulfed him, in utter disregard of the fact that they were not in private and might be observed, and said, "Odin, I must know so much," he accepted it as the completion of his own thought, and did not even consider it strange. End of side 3. To continue, turn the cassette over.